colony does nothing to dull your ambition to leave no nation free. It is indeed a sad condition that you suffer from, this itching desire for a prime position to have all under your feet. Not in my name will you fight. Not in my name will you kill. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you break. Not in my name will you terrorize. Not in my name will you lie. To take heed. One day you'll find yourself pursued by every person you've made bleed. You thought they'd been subdued. You were wrong. You were wrong. They've been freed. They've been freed. Against your evil methods of violence and intimidation, against your hijacking and misinterpretation of my peaceful faith and revelation, I shout with billions in this demonstration. Not in my name will you burn a child. Not in my name will you love. Not in my name will you invade. Not in my name will you pray. Not in my name will you dare to speak again. Not in our name. Not in our name.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Press TV Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, in typical old-fashioned colonial style, with economic exploitation, bullying, and brutality prevailing, the U.S. increases the pressure against Venezuela after killing many Venezuelan fishermen and claiming without giving any proof that Caracas is sending drugs to the U.S. President Donald Trump is now saying that Venezuelan airspace is closed, unilaterally threatening a sovereign country in this way and committing extrajudicial killings are against international law. So where's the outcry from the countries of the world? And is this simply another nail in the coffin of the old international order?
For weeks, tensions in the Caribbean have been intensifying. The latest flashpoint came after President Donald Trump posted on his Truth Social account that Venezuelan airspace should be considered closed in its entirety. Venezuela quickly slammed the move. The country's foreign minister denounced the move, calling it a colonialist threat and an unjustified aggression against the people of Venezuela.
Venezuela denounces and condemns the colonialist threat that seeks to affect the sovereignty of its airspace, constituting an illegal and unjustified aggression against the people of Venezuela.
As tensions rise over Venezuelan airspace, Washington faces mounting criticism abroad and at home. Cuba and Iran join in condemning Washington's posture, but more is expected from neighboring countries, whose silence so far has raised questions about how the region will respond to escalating U.S.-Venezuela tensions.
But, I think most of the pressure lays on the shoulders of the neighboring countries, and that's to say Brazil, and that's to say also Colombia.
On Capitol Hill, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer issued a sharp warning, accusing President Trump of reckless actions that could push America into another costly foreign war. He said, "Americans are tired of endless foreign wars that cost the lives of countless American service members and drain precious resources." So what is Washington's goal? The U.S. claims its actions are aimed at fighting cartels and drug trafficking. But analysts argue the real objective is to force Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro from power, either through pressure or the threat of military force.
And so there's a lot already in the region, and if there's even more on top of that, then one would think either that capability is going to be used or it's all sort of trying to demonstrate to President Maduro that it's either you leave the regime now and perhaps dictate some terms that are somewhat agreeable, or there will be a full-scale military operation to unseat you.
The U.S. has a long history of intervention in Latin America and the Caribbean, from Panama to El Salvador to Cuba. Critics say the latest pressure campaign against Venezuela fits that pattern, with troops already positioned in the Caribbean and rhetoric heating up. The standoff is no longer just about Venezuela's skies. It's about whether America is prepared to risk a wider conflict in its own backyard.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Adjemal Baraka, founder of Black Alliance for Peace out of New York. And John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderøy, Norway. Thank you both for being with me. Let's start it off in New York. And Anjuma, I mean, if the Americans actually have any proof that Venezuela is involved in drug smuggling, why doesn't Washington simply follow the appropriate channels and actions that have been set up for such grievances?
Because the U.S. is operating as a rogue state. That it sets the terms, defines the definitions, and it acts based on its own interests. If there was there's any concern on the part of the U.S. administration to confirm their allegations of, for example, these boats being involved in smuggling drugs into the U.S., then the other day, when they engage in another attack on one of those boats, and there appeared to be survivors, why is it that the Secretary of War apparently ordered a secondary attack to, in essence, eliminate those survivors and to basically eliminate any possibility of providing some confirmation to these allegations that these boats are involved in drug trafficking? So this is how a state that is operating beyond the law will conduct itself, and it will continue to do that until there's significant pressure and opposition coming from the international community. Unfortunately, we don't see much of that pressure emerging.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, John, I mean, we've seen that Trump has increased the threats against Venezuela, but isn't the reality that the U.S. aggression against Venezuela it's not a decision simply made by Trump and the Republicans, because we've seen this before from Democratic-run White House also. So what is the real problem that the United States, what's the problem they have with Venezuela?
Well, I think that they have multiple problems with Venezuela. It's a socialist government. It's part of the Bolivarian Revolution started by Hugo Chavez. They tried to kill Chavez several times and foment coups against him. Now they want to do it against Maduro. Trump openly said he was, in his first term, wanted to have regime change, so-called regime change in Venezuela, but wasn't able to elicit support. But you know, this time around, we have these open extralegal executions, essentially murder of fishermen on boats. And now a retired group of JAG lawyers, Judge Advocate General lawyers, military lawyers, have issued a statement condemning these attacks by the U.S. against the boats, claiming they are illegal orders, they are murder, that Hegseth is a war criminal, and that soldiers should actually disobey such orders. You know, and Hegseth, as your other guest alluded to the other day, made a clear order directive on that last, because there were survivors in the last attack against boats. He made clear that he wanted no survivors. He wanted helpless civilians clinging to the side of the boat or what was left of the boat. He wanted them executed. This is murder, and there are legal experts everywhere who are just appalled at this. And of course, senior military figures, especially in the Navy, have taken early retirement or simply quit because they object to how Hegseth runs things. But there's bigger questions here. The U.S., yes, hates Venezuela because it's socialist. They want the oil, yes, because they have the largest oil reserves in the world. All of that is yes. But this is a kind of distraction from other things that Trump is struggling with. His approval rating is incredibly low. The Epstein Files story will not go away. People are angry about his, in quotation marks, peace plan for Ukraine. So this was seen as a popular project.
Okay.
Marco Rubio is the driving force, though, the little kind of Gusano fascist who is now Secretary of State. This is his pet project.
Well, what about that, Anjuma? Do you agree with what John has said, that this is a sort of a distraction from other decisions, less popular decisions, but the decision dealing with Venezuela is also not a popular decision, as has been alluded to. The schism that we are seeing from former military individuals and with the current Pentagon. I mean, your thoughts on exactly what is happening here, and are we seeing this type of a schism possibly increasing, or how do you see it?
Well, I think it is a bit of a distraction, but let's remind ourselves that there's a particular logic to what is unfolding with Venezuela. Venezuela is consistent with U.S. policy in terms of its commitment to regional dominance. This is part of their national security strategy. It's based on the notion of full spectrum and dominance, and Venezuela is key. Is key to the entire Americas region, both the states in so-called Latin America, but also the Caribbean. So the move being made by the U.S. is consistent with those principles and those strategic objectives. What we're seeing in addition, though, is what made the U.S. and the West what it is today. This is straight up thievery. They want the oil in Venezuela and in Guyana. They want to be able to control The fact that in Latin America you have 31% of all of the planet's fresh water. They want to be able to influence the lithium in the lithium triangle. They want the copper in this part of the world. So this is part of the imperialist project. It's part of the colonial project that resulted with the Western nations becoming the predominant powers on this planet. So there's a logic to this. It's a cynical and backward logic, but is nevertheless a logic, mm-hmm. and that logic is the continuation of the colonial imperialist domination by the U.S. And their Western allies.
Hmm. Well, John, I mean, what does it mean when Trump says Venezuelan airspace is closed? And what does it mean for Venezuela? And what does it mean for the United States?
Well, this is an interesting question. the colonial aspect is absolutely true. I mean, this is the very definition of U.S. imperialism. And they, the U.S. and the ideologues in the White House and all those think tanks in D.C., they view that oil in Venezuela and, yeah, the rare earth minerals, copper, and whatever else they're going to discover. It's an extraordinarily rich country in terms of natural resources. They view that as theirs. And they resent the fact that they don't control it. It's why they hated Chavez so much. So the question, though, with the declaration of airspace being closed, what it means, well, I think the bigger question is what does Trump and Hegseth think this invasion is going to look like? The U.S. can't occupy Venezuela. They can bomb it. I don't think they can send troops on the ground, boots on the ground into Venezuela, into the extraordinarily deep jungles of that country and mountains, if they don't have the resources. They couldn't beat Yemen. And so this is an extraordinary sort of spectacle of saber rattling and bellicose rhetoric, but I'm not sure what they're going to do. Trump has been threatening this invasion for several months now and claiming, you know, he's a narco-terrorist, Maduro, so forth. And it should be noted that the cartel he's accused of running doesn't even exist. There are no drugs coming into the United States on those boats. The boats don't have the range to get to the United States. And there's never been any evidence that Maduro has anything to do with drugs.
Okay.
And so all of this is just a fantasy because the U.S. wants, a distraction, B, it's something they've longed to do for 40 years. But I don't know how they're going to do it, you see.
Okay. They can Stay with me, John. Stay with me. Let me get Ajuma back in this discussion. I mean, Ajuma, at the same time that Trump is creating this scenario about Maduro and trafficking drugs to the states. He also, at the same time, is pardoning former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was a U.S. puppet and smuggled hundreds of tons of cocaine into the U.S. So let's talk about this and the paradox, doing this at the same time. I mean, if smuggling drugs, well, he's using that as the reason for all of this. So what kind of sense does it make to pardon Hernandez at this point in time?
Well, what it demonstrates is the consistency of the thinking of the individuals in that administration. That basically, again, this has nothing to do with drugs. The fact of the matter is that this former Honduran president is responsible for something like 400 tons of cocaine being smuggled into the United States. But yet he is going to receive a pardon. So again, the only way one understands the U.S. policy vis-a-vis of Venezuela is to put it in global context. One has to understand that this Venezuela policy is an extension of the U.S. policy in West Asia, the attacks using Fort Israel into southern Lebanon, the undermining of the government in Syria, the attacks on Iran, that this is part of their global strategy to maintain and to expand U.S. and Western dominance. So that's the only way that one can really understand this. If we get into the minutiae of all the various details, and we can kind of distract ourselves. This is part of an imperialist project, and we need to understand that. And we need to understand that this government, this state, is prepared to continue to operate beyond the bounds of international law and international morality. And all states need to understand that. And the peoples on this planet need to understand that. That basically, this is a declaration of war that the Trump administration has declared on the rest of the planet and the rest of the people. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they represent now an existential threat to global humanity. That's
right.
The reality we
point.
Have to deal with.
Well, interesting point. What about that, John? It represents an existential threat because if this could happen to Venezuela, that Trump can do this, what stops it from happening to any country, friend or foe? Because we have seen how Trump even deals with the friends. I mean, shouldn't all countries be standing up against this?
Well, of course. I mean, of course, because this is just pure colonialism at work. It's imperialism at work. They want to go in and steal the resources. There are lots of different motivations behind this particular project, but it's also a sort of search for a cause, a search for a meaning. Trump wants to have some wins on his ledger, and he doesn't have any. The U.S. is domestically in crisis. The military is not the force that it was 30, 40 years ago that scares anybody. They've had one defeat after another. And as I say, they can't really invade Venezuela. It will be a catastrophe. So this is a lot of verbiage and a lot of show, and you note that the only thing that's actually happened is blowing up these little harmless fishing boats or whatever they were. Maybe they were smuggling cigarettes. Who knows? They certainly aren't narco-terrorists.
Right.
So, that's all that's actually been, the U.S. has been able to do is blow up a few boats and kill 60 or 70 civilians. I don't know if they try something larger what the result will be. But yes, are they an existential threat? Of course. The U.S.,
okay.
Imperialist power, and they need to be stopped.
All right. Well, Anjuma, I mean, John talks about, like a little victory or whatever for the U.S. in the middle of so much failure. But let's look at the reality. I mean, Venezuela has a population of like 28.5 million people compared to the U.S. 341 million. And the U.S. is 10 times the size of Venezuela. I mean, what type of victory is that? I mean, what type of so-called superpower would actually feel that this is any type of victory in doing what it is doing in the way that it is?
I guess they are calculating that if you control and contain Venezuela, you can control and contain the Americas regions. So that is the strategic objective. But I think you're absolutely right, and John is right also, that basically this military operation is fraught with real concerns for the U.S. They have suffered defeat after defeat when they have intervened militarily. But what's going to happen, I think, because they have accumulated this armada off the coast of Venezuela, I think the Trump administration is compelled to do something, as ill-advised as it may be. And the result will be that there will be Venezuelan people, if that happens, who will unnecessarily lose their lives.
Well, John, your thoughts about that. I mean, with the situation, do you see Trump actually going forward? Because you said a couple of times that you don't see the U.S. putting boots on the ground. And we have the Venezuelan people who say that they will do whatever it takes to defend their land. So where do you see this going? Do you see an actual invasion taking place, or how do you see the U.S. handling this situation?
Yeah, I mean, this is the question. I think, honestly, that Trump would love an off-ramp at this point, and he may pivot in some way to a diplomatic solution, because I think I think there are a few veteran military minds still around at the Pentagon who are advising him this is a very bad idea. And Hegseth is not one of them, and Rubio is not one of them. But I think, were he going to actually invade Venezuela with boots on the ground and launch an amphibious assault, he would have done it already. All this sort of, you know, pot shots at these boats that pose no threat to anybody. They're unarmed boats. This is just optics. This is just, you know, a photo op for Pete Hegseth. There's nothing substantive. You have to remember what happened with Yemen. Trump eventually, you know, signed a deal with Yemen, an agreement, because they couldn't put a dent in the Houthis' shutting down of the Red Sea. And this is the poorest country in the Arab world. So I don't think Venezuelans are actually scared. They're very tired from the sanctions, from the constant, you know, political and trade pressures put on them. I'm sure they would love some kind of relief from that. And Maduro has behaved in an exemplary way, actually. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't know what Trump thinks the end game is here. But my guess would be that he will back away from an invasion.
Okay, well, speaking of backing away from invasion, I mean, Anjuma, we know that Trump said he's willing, and he allegedly had a phone call with Maduro, and now is saying he's willing to meet with Maduro. Do you agree with John that possibly he's looking for, as he called it, a deal with Venezuela now, or no? Do you see that the aggression will continue? 1 minute, please.
The aggression will continue. Any conversation between Maduro and Trump would be one in which Trump would try to put pressure on him to basically surrender. The military action that could take place and might take place will be primarily bombings. They'll bomb Caracas to the ground if they can. So, no, I don't have much faith in any kind of a negotiated settlement at this time.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me. Anjuma Baraka, founder of Black Alliance for Peace out of New York. John Stepling, author and commentator out of Inderoy. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning to all listeners from around the world. You are tuned into Iran Radio. It's very nice to have you with us. We start this hour's lineup with our radio productions feature. Dialogue will be next. The program looks at the most important conversation between Shiite imams and their followers, questioners, and leaders of other Islamic faith and sects. That will be followed by ulama's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the speeches of well-known and reputable Islamic scholars. Our varied radio productions feature will be our final program this hour.
The sovereignty of a nation versus the power of the U.S. military. That is the situation that Venezuela finds itself in. The country with the richest and vast amount of natural resources like oil, gas, gold, and lithium is being targeted by the U.S., a regime change operation that has many goals in mind by removing the democratically elected president. The U.S. excuse that it is targeting drug cartels in Venezuela is not believed by anyone. What the U.S. wants from Venezuela is the removal of Maduro from power and to ultimately flood the market with Venezuelan oil and gas in order to decrease income from some of its enemies. Hi, I'm Karash Purnamati. This is The Economic Divide. Coming up in today's program, our first headline, the U.S. wants regime change in Venezuela, and it's doing that through first a massive military buildup, hoping Maduro will cede power on his own. This would be another U.S. regime change scenario in Latin America. It's common knowledge that the U.S. wants Venezuela's riches like oil and gas. But what the U.S. doesn't want the world to know is how this could potentially achieve multiple U.S. goals impacting its adversaries. U.S. sanctions on Venezuela. The U.S. has sanctioned Venezuela for much of this past decade, hoping that crippling its economy would instigate a popular uprising. But that has failed to materialize since Venezuelans have substantially overcome some of these illegal sanctions. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Professor Peter Kuznick, director of the Nuclear Studies Institute at American University, and also Ramon Grossvogel, professor at the University of California at Berkeley, specializing in decolonial studies and political economy of the world system.
Thank you for having me on the show. The excuse that Trump and members of his administration are giving is that Venezuela is in part responsible for the drugs that are flowing into the United States, and that therefore Maduro is a narco-terrorist, and the United States, in order to protect its own national security, is destroying the boats that are carrying the drugs. This is a lie. It's total fabrication. What Trump says we're going after, the U.S. going after, is the fentanyl. Venezuela is not involved in transiting, manufacturing, producing, shipping fentanyl. The U.S. military told members of Congress that the drugs that are on some of these boats are cocaine, not fentanyl. Fentanyl is produced mostly in Mexico. So, number one, that's a lie. Number two, you don't send a vast armada and all these troops, 15,000 troops, to Venezuela, off the coast of Venezuela, to interdict drug boats. So the U.S. wants to invade Venezuela, partly because Venezuela has vast oil reserves. Some say the biggest oil reserves in the world. So that's what Trump is after. And if the U.S. is able to overthrow Maduro and take control of those oil reserves, that would have great impact not only on the world economy, but on global geopolitics.
Venezuela has suffered extreme hardship under illegal U.S. sanctions. An economic embargo has blocked Venezuela from accessing the U.S.-dominated international financial system and prevented Venezuela from exporting its oil and fixing or updating its oil infrastructure, causing government revenue to shrink by a staggering 99%, according to the top U.N. expert on sanctions, the special rapporteur Elena Duhani. However, Venezuela's economy today is in a much better state than it was previously during the previous U.S.-led attempt coup back in 2019 to 2020, which caused hyperinflation. The inflation rate has fallen a lot. Real wages have risen. Food and everyday necessities are affordable right now. The economy has dollarized a lot, however, which erodes the monetary sovereignty of the Venezuelan government.
Has a number of things in mind. Number one, it wants to seize Venezuela's oil. And that would then flood the market with oil, which would lower the price of oil and therefore have a devastating impact, the U.S. figures, on Russia's economy, on Iran's economy. But also, this is the U.S. way to overthrow the government in Cuba. Cuba is dependent on inexpensive oil from Venezuela. The Cuban economy would be, which is shaky already, would be sunk by cutting off that oil from Venezuela. The U.S. biggest prize in Latin America is, and it's not exactly Latin America, but South America, would be Brazil.
Welcome back. This is the social section of the program. The first item that we are covering for you is, can you imagine what would happen to oil exports if the U.S. really achieved a regime change in Venezuela? No wonder that Russia is so nervous about what's happening there. As the U.S. renews its threats against Venezuela, authorizes a CIA operation, and mobilizes regime change rhetoric, the country is still being denied access to its own gold reserves. $1.8 billion frozen in the Bank of England. It's not about democracy. It's about control of Venezuela's old gold and lithium and punishing nations that resist the empire. The Cartel of the Suns was literally created by the CIA, also known as the Cocaine Import Agency. Max Blumenthal methodically exposes the WMD-level lies justifying U.S. attacks on Venezuela and explain the devastating consequences of a regime change war.
The big lie of this war is the Cartel of the Suns. As Ryan said, the Cartel of the Suns was literally created by the CIA, also known as the Cocaine Import Agency, to ship 22 tons of drugs into the United States in the early 90s through its main point of contact in the pre-Chavez Venezuelan National Guard, General Ramon Guillen.
Former U.S. Ambassador James Story. Maduro is sitting on top of the world's largest oil reserves, minerals that will fuel the 21st century economy, and he's in bed with our strategic competitors. It isn't about narco-trafficking, it certainly is not about democracy. It's about Monroe doctoring imperial domination to steal Venezuela's resources for U.S. corporations.
Thank you for inviting me to the program. The U.S. is in a big crisis. I would say that the U.S. empire is in a terminal crisis. They have lost the commercial wars with China in Africa and Asia. The last remaining space that they have at hand to keep their status as empire is Latin America. But however, in Latin America, there's still a strong presence of China in the markets and of sovereign countries that are challenging U.S. empire in the region. Venezuela is one of the richest countries in the world. He has the largest oil fields in the world. He has one of the countries with the large resources in gas. He's one of the countries with the, you know, largest resources in gold mines, in water, in minerals that are important for artificial intelligence, computers, and military industry. So it's a very wealthy country in terms of resources. And so what the U.S. is trying to do is to recover those resources as a way to recover its, come out of its own crisis. Remember, USA has a debt that is in the trillions. It's around $30 trillion with the letter T. And they need to, in a sense, do something dramatic in order to recover those resources from a rich country such as Venezuela, because the Bolivarian government has, in a sense, kept sovereignty over its economy and over its natural resources.
One similarity between Venezuela and Syria was the economic warfare waged against them by the West. The Syrian government fell in part because the US-EU Caesar sanctions had devastated the economy. Syria could not get access to hard currency and thus had very high inflation. The major difference, the Western-sponsored war on Syria, which began in 2011, the Syrian state was significantly weakened by more than a decade of war.
The U.S. has a reserve of oil in their own country for another 6 to 7 years. U.S. is now having a situation where in the very short term, they're going to have scarcity of oil. Right now, they don't have any other sources of oil like they used to have in the past, except purchasing the oil at the international markets the way they are cost today. And what they're trying to do in recovering the oil fields of Venezuela, which, by the way, have the largest oil reserve in the world, okay? Venezuela is the country with the largest oil reserve in the world. What they're trying to do is to have access to oil resources at a cheaper price.
Welcome back. This is the Info News section of the program. The first item that we are covering for you is the U.S. hunger. Explainer, why millions sleep on an empty stomach in the U.S., the wealthiest country on earth? On October the 31st, former U.S. President Barack Obama highlighted an issue that is largely overlooked by legacy media but widely debated inside the country. More than 47 million Americans, including 1 in 5 children, don't have reliable, affordable access to nutritious food. And as the cost of living skyrockets, more families are depending on SNAP benefits or food stamps to put food on the table, he wrote in a post on X. The next item is the EU economy. EU blames economic woes on Donald Trump, but forgets who broke the machine. Brussels is preparing to cut growth forecasts for 2026, hinting already that Trump's tariffs and trade uncertainty are dragging Europe down. A neat explanation, especially for a crisis that the EU has spent years engineering with its own hands. The same EU that proudly cut itself off from cheap Russian energy. The next item is cashing in on the Gaza genocide. Gaza war bonanza, how U.S. giants cashed in big on Israel's genocide. Donald Trump is currently seeking congressional approval of a $6.4 billion package of U.S. weapons sales to Israel, including $3.8 billion in Boeing Apache attack helicopters and $1.9 billion for 3,200 to 3,250 infantry assault vehicles. West Coast giants like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon also signed deals to provide cloud computing, AI infrastructure, and data services to the Israeli military. Cloud deals can be worth tens of millions per year per contract. Our next item is oil sales to Israel. According to a report by Oil Change International, 25 countries were responsible for shipping vast amounts of oil to Israel during its two-year Gaza offensive. Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Russia, and the U.S. were among the largest suppliers of oil. More than 21 million tons of crude oil and refined fuels, including jet fuel used by military aircraft. Welcome back. This is the in-depth section of the program. The U.S. wants to eliminate the drug trafficking cartels in Venezuela, or at least that is the facade that the U.S. wants other nations to believe. The U.S., in fact, wants Nicolas Maduro gone. This reasoning is slammed internationally and also by the Latin American countries. Why, you ask? It's because they don't want the same fate happening to them. During the time that President Hugo Chavez was in charge of Venezuela, economically speaking, there were many strides made under his socialist system. Let's look at this graph, for example. The unemployment rate in 1999 was 14.5%. It almost halved to 7.6% in 2009. The next item is GDP per capita. In 1999, it was $4,105, while in 2011 it was $10,000, more than $10,000. The currency, let's look at this graph as well, and the inflation, the average consumer prices back in 1999 was 23.6%. In 2012, it was 31.6%. The next item that we are going to have is the extreme poverty rate. In 1999, it was 23.4%. But in 2011, it was 8.5% under Hugo Chavez. And the final one that we are going to have right here is oil exports, the nominal net rates. In 1999, it was $14.4 billion, while in 2011, $60 billion in revenue. The next item is a snapshot of the major sectors of the economy, which dates back to over a decade ago. It's interesting that oil exports back in 2008 were over $43 billion, to have been reduced to $8.62 billion. The U.S. sanctions on the country were a major factor in low GDP per capita, of course, confidence in the government, and of course, inflation, which exploded to unprecedented levels, as you can see. Now, let's bring in our guest, Professor Peter Kuznick, Director of the Nuclear Studies Institute at American University. Professor, is the U.S. flexing muscles against Venezuela to project power over Latin American countries, that if they don't follow the U.S. foreign policy here, they are going to suffer the same fate?
The U.S. is sending a message to all of Latin America, and as it's been sending to the rest of the world. When Trump talked at the beginning about invading Panama, invading Canada, invading Greenland, we saw who he is and what he represents. He said he wants the Nobel Peace Prize and deserves it. I'm the person who nominated last year's winner for the Nobel Peace Prize, the Japanese anti-nuclear group, survivor group, Nihon Hidankyo. I was part of their delegation in Oslo. The only prize that Trump deserves is the biggest warmonger, biggest fascist enabler on the planet right now.
Now, this graph right here shows the extent that the U.S. sanctions affected the Venezuelan economy. In 1999, $334 billion was the GDP of Venezuela, and during Maduro's time, it was reduced down to $68,216,000, a result of harsh U.S. sanctions which cut off Venezuela from the world financial system. The next item looks at the year 2008. Things started to improve for Maduro and his government, and here are the improvements seen in different sectors as reflected in the GDP, which is a drastic improvement compared to figures just a couple of years ago. The economic indicators here shows the improvements. Notice GDP coming in at positive 3%, with inflation caught dramatically, quite an improvement from what it was previously. The economy's rebound was due to adjusting to sanctions, domestic production, and help from countries like Russia, Iran, and China. And repairing oil infrastructure allowed oil production to rise above 1 million barrels per day, bringing in more hard currency. One of the lesser known facts is that the U.S. has throughout its history attacked sovereign Latin American countries on many occasions, over 50 times, in wanting regime change or coups to lead to regime change. That is why many of the Latin American countries are against the U.S. warmongering policies, in this case, against Venezuela. Now let's bring in our other guest, Roman Grossvogel, professor at the University of California at Berkeley. Professor, can it be concluded that Donald Trump is after the oil and gas, not only for economic benefits for the U.S., but to be able to control the oil market against countries like in Latin America who are not subservient to the U.S. demands?
USA is trying to destroy the Bolivarian government, and they want to, which is right now the wall that is putting obstacles for the U.S. to have full control over the governments and the economy of the region. Right now, they are in an offensive to destroy all the governments that used to have some kind of sovereignty and claims against U.S. empire. For example, the Correa government in Ecuador was destroyed. The Kirchner's and Fernandez government in Argentina was destroyed. Now the Bolivia government was also has been destroyed recently. And now the main country left right now with wealth resources is Venezuela.
As of November the 23rd, the U.S. has announced a new phase of military aggression against Venezuela, with so many U.S. officials saying that the U.S. is very much prepared for a new round of actions against Venezuela. By the time this program is aired, the U.S. may have launched an attack on Venezuela. The U.S. pressure to oust Maduro from power appears to be a definitive goal. Why would a military buildup in the Caribbean underway for months and Trump to have authorized covert CIA operations? It may be just a matter of time before there is an invasion or targeting of sites inside Venezuela. I'm Kyarash Bunamati, and I'll see you next week.
traveler, just as they were walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. Just to know you, whoever you are, laugh with you, learn from you, open to you my heart. But soon when I say goodbye and move on, I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return. While I'm here, kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
The kind of neighbor who prays for you and me.
There for you, a shoulder to turn to. I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return. To know you, I've learned so much.
Been a pleasure to know you, I've learned so much.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Pray for you, hope to meet you, my heart you have touched.
Remember me, so I might be with you. I'm a traveler, just as they were, walking the world, thinking of the past on an earth so vast, waiting to return, waiting to return, waiting to return, return to my
We have to have a very fair assessment of this academic and intellectual icon of early Islam.
His impact is more pronounced in jurisprudence that he formalized.
And tens of thousands of statements and teachings have reached us from Al-Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio.